Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
As Washington continues to build a foundation of success on and off the field, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Kanduri & Murad. They're going to help you update your last will and testament and set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation for their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. If you tell them we sent you, you'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Right now on our guest hotline, we have an opportunity to talk to former head coach Jay Gruden. He has called plays, been an OC, and been a head coach in the National Football League. Who better to get to the bottom after watching the film of what ails this Washington offense and how Cliff Kingsbury can get things going than Jay?
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Tedbert Automotive Group, Tedbert Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Tedbert Chantilly Lincoln, and Tedbert Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Tedbert for life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tedbert.com.
So, Jay, why don't we just start with yesterday specifically when you went back and watched the game? Was it about what you expected? Better, worse on film? What'd you think?
Well, obviously the last few minutes was pretty chaotic on both sides of the ball. But the first three quarters, I think, you know, it just is a matter of taking advantage of great opportunities, and Washington didn't do it. With great field position opportunities to really jump out on them early and put your foot down and show who's a better team. Just let Dallas hang around, and unfortunately, some big plays at the end. Dallas got the win.
What'd you see from this offense? Because the last 5 minutes, they managed about 200 yards and, you know, 20 points or whatever the heck it was, Jay. But for 55 minutes, not much doing for this offense. What have you seen from it here this week and really over the last month or so as it's kind of not performed like we saw early in the season?
Yeah, a couple things. Third downs is bad. You know, they're 12 for 38 in their last three games, 10 sacks. You know, time of possession is they're averaging 24 minutes per game in the last three games. A lot of that has to do with the ability to keep the ball, and they're not staying on the field on third down. They're really good early in the year, and right now they're struggling. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Sometimes it's pressure related. Sometimes Jade misses a throw. Sometimes there's no throw to be had. Sometimes you know we're working Noah Brown twice on third down in the game, and Terry McLaurin standing on the other side without getting an opportunity. So there's a lot of things they can clean up, but the most important thing is they got to do a better job on third down.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways we can go, but we were just talking about Daniels at the end of last hour, and I certainly wouldn't say he is the main problem or even one of the main problems. But yesterday, there were way too many times when I went back and looked, and even Dan Orlovsky just put together a little reel on ESPN where, you know, they're going to, say, Noah Brown, or he just kind of locks in on a throw and the guy's not open and it's an incompletion when Terry comes free on the other side, or, you know, Zach Ertz is running free, and it just seems like he's kind of deciding where he's going to go. When that's happening, what does that normally tell you, and how much of that is like a confidence thing as he's been struggling lately? Like, what is your thought on that?
Yeah, you know, the couple times he went to Noah, one was on a slant on the outside. It's kind of really was his only option on that one. It was really good play by the defensive back. Noah didn't get much separation. Another one was on a deep curl. I think he should have come off of it, but you know, some of it's pressure related. A lot of times it's hard to get off your number one target when you feel pressure inside of you. You got to get rid of the ball. I think he feels like, I don't know, it's just hard to point your finger at one thing. Sometimes it's pressure. Sometimes it's he feels like the guy is open, a defensive back makes a good play, and sometimes there's nobody open. I don't know. But it's easy to hold the film on pause, and then when the ball's gone, let it play again and see somebody come wide open. See, you should have held the ball and thrown it to this guy. That's not always the case when you have the ball in your hand and you're playing quarterback. But there are times, I agree with Orzlovsky, that he could have maybe held the ball a little bit longer. But that's easier said than done for a young quarterback learning.
Jay Gruden with us here on G&D. What have you seen from this offensive line? Felt like early part of the season, maybe even up to halfway through, they were mauling people and Jaden Daniels was upright. I know the numbers don't really say that it's been bad, but it doesn't feel like maybe the holes are there in the run game as much, Jay, and it feels like, you know, they're, I don't want to say they're confused, but they're getting overwhelmed a little bit in the passing game. Just the eye test. What are you seeing from that group?
Yeah, same thing. The last three games, they only averaged 100 yards rushing per game, and yesterday, had like 140, and Jaden had like 60 of it. So I don't think they're getting as much push as they did earlier in the year. They're not doing a lot of the same stuff they did early as well, some of the pin-pull things. And quite frankly, you know, they're just not getting the push. I think they're worn down a little bit. This has been a tough stretch for these guys. They've played a lot of games in a row, and they need that bye week badly, and it's coming up after this Tennessee game. They just got to buckle up one more week and get this big win against Tennessee. Then they can get a bye week, get their legs back, and then hopefully we'll see some more movement later in the year.
I mean, shouldn't the mini bye, like, that was the most rest they've had since the beginning of the season against a team in Dallas, traveling on a short week after playing Monday night with $100 million in salary cap on the IR. I feel like that should have given them a little bit of recharge of the batteries. It certainly worked for Daniels, who looked more explosive as a runner. Like, why didn't that trickle down, do you think?
I don't know. If there's going to be a team to be able to run the ball and force your will, it'd be against the Cowboys, because they haven't stopped the run all year. And I was surprised by that. I don't understand it personally, but I just know they don't look the same with the same pop they have coming off the line of scrimmage as they did earlier in the year. And they're playing good teams. They're playing the Giants twice, and they're moving the Giants, who have a really good defensive line, and other teams as well. So I don't know what the hell's going on. Maybe Dallas did a lot of movement, a lot of things that they weren't ready for athletically, but I can't put my finger on that one.
Yeah, Jay, let's get to the run game that you mentioned. If you go up against a really good defense, you may not be able to, you know, run for 200 yards like it's Nebraska in the mid-90s, but this Dallas team has basically just rolled over and died in terms of run defense. Everyone's had their way with them, regardless of whether they want to stack the box and prioritize it. Teams have just beaten them up. Didn't happen at all yesterday, it felt like. And I think Daniels had, you know, roughly half of the team's rushing yards, over 70. Running backs just weren't able to kind of get going there. What did you see from, you know, just blocking scheme, O-line, everything with the run game?
Yeah, the scheme was fine. They just, you know, sometimes when you do these double teams up to the linebacker, sometimes you leap too early and you leave the defensive lineman with a good angle on the remaining offensive lineman, and he gets the tackle. Sometimes you stay on too late and the linebacker knifes through there. There's an art to these double teams up to the linebackers, and Overshawn's a good linebacker. He does a good job playing off the double team and being really skinny, and Parsons is pretty athletic on the backside, tracking things down. So there's a lot of different issues when it comes to the running game. Tight ends are involved in it. Sometimes the back misses a hole. Sometimes Jaden, I thought Jaden could have pulled a couple of them as well. So they just got to get back on track, get their confidence going. But I'd like to see him start to – I think the way Jaden finished that game against Dallas, his ability to move the ball down the field, throwing the ball, I'd like him to be a little bit more aggressive throwing the ball early in the game against Tennessee, because he really showed – he really did a nice job there at the end, showing the accuracy and poise that we all know and love about him. So hopefully they become a little bit more aggressive, maybe use the pass to set up the run next week.
Jay Gruden with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, looking back at yesterday's loss to the Dallas Cowboys. What did you make of the decision at the end to kick the extra point? They'd already missed one. They'd missed a field goal, tie the game, go to overtime versus a two-point conversion.
I don't know. What'd you think of it?
Well, I think at home against an inferior opponent, I probably send the game to overtime generally.
Yeah,
I'm a big proponent of – I would go for two on the road against bad team, or like a team that I'm better than. The team that I'm worse than all the time. But at home, this was kind of the opposite. The only thing I would say is that side of the field yesterday, there were at least four kicks missed total. I mean, so I don't know. It was just one of those strange games where it felt like their defense is fatigued. I got a cheat code short yardage quarterback who had a two-point conversion untouched earlier in that same end zone. Maybe I'll just end this thing now.
Yeah, I mean, there's merit to that. I don't think he's wrong either way, to be honest with you. If he goes for two and doesn't get it, people will be on him a little bit, but you appreciate the aggression. If he kicks it, goes into overtime, I feel like the team could win it in overtime. It's just one out of 100 that the kicker is going to miss an extra point. You know, that's just crazy. Unfortunately, he missed it, but I don't think he'd be wrong either way, personally.
Jay,
what would Danny say? What do you say, Danny? Should he go for two?
I'm very rarely a go for two guy. I just think everybody takes it for granted, like they're going to make it, and nobody deals with the repercussions.
Yeah. You don't like the nerves of, like, it all comes down to this one play.
Yeah, especially if I think I'm better than the team. I'd much rather play more football than less of it. But I see the point about on the road. You know, I'd rather take one shot against a really good opponent, et cetera. So I never kill guys for not going for two.
Yeah, me neither.
So let me go into this in terms of sort of coach player relationship right now? Because things aren't going great for the first squad that started 7-2, where everything's coming up you. You're walking the yellow brick road. There's some adversity now. How would you handle things this week with Jaden Daniels, this offense, and everything else in terms of not necessarily pep talks? These are grown men, but like, what would you try to do to build back up?
I think you got to be ultra positive and let these guys understand that we're 7-5 and we're in the playoff picture right now. At the season end of the day, we're in the playoffs, and that's a hell of a goal. Before the season started, nobody gave this team a chance. And we did a great job early in the year, shocked everybody, but now we're struggling a little bit. But we got to get back on track against the Tennessee team. It's 3-8. They got a big win yesterday. They have some good players, I understand, but get to 8-5, get to the bye. Well, we'll regroup, figure some things out, and then make a late season run against the Saints, Eagles, Falcons, and Cowboys. I mean, this can be done. This season is far from over. There's a lot left on our plate here. We got to be positive and make sure we're all in coming Tuesday to work or Wednesday, whatever they start.
Jay, I don't know how much you've heard or read about or seen this Cliff Kingsbury regression storyline, but this goes back to Arizona, where EPA per play and, you know, pretty much every metric you look at, right? Success, efficiency, yards, points. Second half of all of his seasons, very different offensively than the first half. And sometimes it gets chalked up to, well, Kyler got hurt or he was playing through pain or whatever. But it's pretty much every single year he's been calling plays in the league. This has happened, and we're seeing it here. Do you think there's any merit to that, or is it kind of coincidental sample size thing? And if there is merit to it, what about his system do you think leads to it being solved and him now having to figure out a counterpunch?
Yeah, I don't know what happened in Arizona. I don't really recall that late season collapse. I know they didn't play very well when he got fired at all. But there's a lot of things that can be reasons for it. Injuries, you're looking at other teams that have injuries of key players. People get worn down. From an offensive coordinator standpoint, you do have to adapt to different teams you play. You have to throw some curveballs at the defense. You can't just run your same plays at the same formations. I think he does a good job in the running game, but I think some of his passing games, if I had any recommendations for him at all, it would be move Terry around a little bit. You can't always put him on the left. Use the word Buckeye. Noah Brown and Terry switch sides. It's not that hard. You know what I mean? Line him up on the right side. Put him to the field sometimes, not to the boundary when you're always on the left hash. You know, like the slant of Noah Brown. Let Terry run that slant route. Just say the word Buckeye. Let Terry be the outside guy. Those are just a few things that I would do different. But I think they have, you know, they have talent. They're just not over blessed with talent, you know, other than Terry and obviously the running game. Now that B-Rob's hurt, Jaden's a talented guy. Zach Ertz is not a separating type tight end. He's a zone type of tight end. Noah Brown is a long strider, not with a lot of speed. He's a big physical guy. You love his effort, but he's not a guy that's going to get a lot of separation. And then their third receiver, who is it? Luke McCaffrey. He's not exactly a guy you want to separate. And he's not a Cooper Kupp or a guy in the slot that you can really count on third down and five. So in fairness to Cliff, where do you go on third down if Terry's getting covered? You know, that's the issue that he has. So he's got to come up with some creative ways to get these balls outside, some pass concepts to work zone and let guys have some access. And, man, it's easier said than done.
So, Jay, how did you think about how – let me – this is sort of like double-edged here. Bear with me. As a coordinator, as a guy, as a play caller, coach, et cetera, how did you think about how opponents were going to look at what you were doing? You know what I mean? Almost like always anticipating their counterpunch with something else, right? Because obviously your base offense, it's who you are, it's your identity, it's how you call plays. But then as you kind of move through a season, knowing that they've got tape on you, how did you sort of think about evolving and maybe countering their counters?
Yeah, sometimes as the season goes on, it gets harder and harder because there's so much tape to look at. You know, you look at the blitz reel, you're like, oh, my God, this is the three-hour blitz tape. You know, you're looking at their different fronts. It's a nightmare. And you're never sure how they're going to attack you. You think about your best players, what they're going to try to do to your best players. Obviously, Terry and how they're going to keep Jade in the pocket. What's their base coverage system? What do they like to do in key situations? Third down, third and 2-5, third and 6-8. Try to break it down that way. But still, there's never an exact science. That's why, to me, it's very important to get in formations that will give you some pre-snap reads. Put the tight end outside by himself. If the safety goes out there, you know it's man. Put the back out there. Back runs out there, you know it's man. If not, you know it's zone. Then you know what side of the field to work based on. Is it cover three or cover two? So you try to give your quarterback pre-snap hints to alleviate some of the confusion. I wish they'd do a little bit more of that. And then you can work your matchups in man, and you can work your coverage beaters in zone.
No Austin Ekeler potentially in the short term here. Unfortunately, he suffered what looked like a pretty serious concussion at the end of the game. He's a guy I really like as a matchup problem too on some of those like choice routes out of the backfield or some of the Texas stuff you could do where you get him running those arrow routes to the middle of the field and leaving linebackers. I mean, without that, it's another easy button that's kind of gone. Not that they were utilizing that all that much the last couple weeks anyway. Yeah. But, I mean, is there a way to replace that? Because my concern is I'm trying to figure out a way, and I don't know how to do it, but you do. Like, you got to get this guy easier answers, and the quick game stuff that was layups for him early in the year is gone. And how do I get back to that?
Yeah, they're relying on the screens, the perimeter screens, which a lot of teams do. Caleb Williams had a lot of success yet the last couple of weeks throwing perimeter screens and DJ Moore for big yards, and Cliff's done a good job of that, but those haven't been working quite as well as they did earlier in the season. Some of them are off the run alerts. If the loaded box, the box is loaded, you throw out a bubble screen to whoever it is. You get some positive yards there. But there are other ways to get some quick games and all that stuff. But I agree, losing Austin Ekeler hurts. That's another weapon out of the backfield that can really work matchups against linebackers. Teams are starting to play tight man-to-man with somebody over the top of Terry, or Terry's having trouble getting access. You got to find somebody else. And usually the back has great matchups against linebackers nowadays because linebackers can't cover. Tight end against strong safeties. Strong safeties can't cover very good, but that's not a great matchup with Ertz right now in man-to-man. So, you know, they just got – I don't know where else they're going to turn. Terry's going to have a hell of a game otherwise. Who are you going to work to as a running back now? They cut Chris Rodriguez, so what, do they have one back on the roster right now?
I guess he'll come back, but, yeah, that's where they're at.
Yeah, he's not much of a pass catcher. Maybe they go out and get somebody. But, yeah, that's a part of the game that a lot of people don't utilize. That's why I made it a point to have a guy like Chris Thompson on my team every week, because those are huge matchups and they're easy completions for the quarterback.
Is there a guy that you like that they don't use that you would say, hey, that guy needs the ball more? I got a name in mind, but I'm curious what you have.
I don't know him good enough, really. You know, McCaffrey's an interesting guy, but
that's
he's a rookie.
One, yeah.
He looks like he's got a little moxie to him, some separation skills. Not a very fast guy. I don't think he can really get up on people and threaten them with his speed, but it looks like in zone coverage, he could be a guy that can run some option routes and things of that nature. I'd like to see him do a little bit more of that, especially on third down instead of working outside curl routes and slants all the time. So I'd like to work the middle of the field a little bit more, maybe with a guy like Luke or somebody.
Let's go around the NFL for just a couple of minutes before we let you go. I do like the way the Bears offense is trending. They lost in overtime to the Vikings yesterday, but Caleb Williams threw for 340, couple of touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over. And with Thomas Brown, I'm not sure how well you know him, but I know you did a little work with the Rams when he was on that staff there. He seems to have at least gotten Caleb Williams more comfortable in that passing game.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the last 2 weeks they played very well. And I don't know if it was all in the coordinator. Maybe they're getting more confidence. Caleb's just throwing the ball to the right guys and getting the ball out of his hands. I don't think he changed a whole lot. But he has given Caleb some easier throws on first and second down. And then Caleb is creating with his legs and off schedule like we knew he could. And he's not making mistakes and holding on to the ball and taking 10 sacks. I mean, that's huge. I mean, quarterbacks learn. I mean, hell, you know, college he could do that. Pros, he's learning that, hey, I can do it occasionally. I can't do it on every play. Doing a much better job. I don't know if it's offensive coordinator, just Caleb figuring it out.
This Bo Nix Sean Payton pairing seems to be paying some dividends. It just looks like they're a perfect match.
Yeah, they're doing good. I mean, Sean calls a good game, and Bo doesn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, he doesn't force the ball into coverage. That's his MO at Auburn, and that's his MO at Oregon, and that's his MO now. He's not going to make a lot of down the field shot throws like a Caleb Williams that are splash plays like holy cow, but he's going to protect the ball, and he's a very good athlete. He can escape pressure, and he makes good decisions. And if they punt, they punt. They're playing very good defense. They're playing great complementary football right now. Denver will be interesting to see how they finish out.
Jay, Saquon Barkley yesterday ran for 255 against the Rams and 302 all-purpose yards if you count in his receiving yards. He's on pace to break the all-time rushing record of Eric Dickerson. What do you make of him as an MVP candidate? Because it seems like there's an unwritten rule that if you're a running back, you can't win it now.
Yeah, no, he's definitely in the talks. I still think it goes through Josh Allen. If he continues to play like he's playing with the guys that he lost, he's carrying the Buffalo Bills, man. He's unbelievable. I mean, quarterback's a very difficult position to play. So is running back. I get it, but I'd give it to Josh right now. Saquon 2, then Lamar 3, just because they've lost 4 games. We'll see how Lamar does tonight, but Saquon is definitely up in the running. I'd say they're 50-50 right now.
What do you make of Houston? I know, listen, Tennessee, they deserve credit for playing the way they did, but they didn't look right. Houston didn't, even when they were 6-2. It just didn't feel like the same good operation. C.J. Stroud hasn't been as good as maybe folks anticipated this year. What do you see when you watch them?
Offensive line issues big time, I believe. He's not getting much time. They get no holes for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has run over four guys that get 3 yards. I mean, he's an unbelievable back, and he's had a couple of really good games. He's done it all on his own. His offensive line's got to get their act together. I mean, they're not protecting very well. I mean, CJ's forcing throws down the field, very uncharacteristic of him, and turning the ball over, took the safety, two interceptions, I think, yesterday. So they got to do a better job of trying to get the line in sync and blocking better for their back so they don't have to put all the pressure on CJ. We got to remember he's only in his second year, for God's sake. So let's get the running game going and help him out.
The Giants are dreadful. They're 2-9 after getting beat 30-7 yesterday by the Bucs. Tommy DeVito in for Daniel Jones. If you were a head coach and you needed a quarterback, what would be your level of interest in Daniel Jones as a reclamation project? Like light, medium, or strong?
Well, you get him for $300,000, I think, this year, and then you get a compensatory pick if you don't like him. So I'd be very strong to get him in my building just to see how he is. I know what kind of guy he is. He's a great guy, very smart. Loves the game. I'd like to just see his mechanics, see him throwing the ball, you know, in practice and routes on air, just to get to know him a little bit. And who knows? I mean, changes scenarios or sceneries are very good for a lot of people. Look at the quarterback for the Vikings and all these other Sam Darnolds. These guys, sometimes they need Baker Mayfield. They just need another opportunity. Get out of the same system and learn and get better. They're still young.
Jay, thank you as always, man. Have an awesome Thanksgiving, okay?
You got it. You too.
Have a great holiday. There's our buddy Jay Gruden joining us on Grant and Danny. He is with us each and every Monday right here on G&D.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group, Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and chop them all at TedBritt.com.
Great chopping it up with him. Excellent insight on Washington's offense and some of the changes he would make. That was fantastic. Good job by Jay. Next. How sure are you that the Commanders are going to make the playoffs? That is kind of the elephant in the room, is it not? Kind of funny to talk about after a loss to the Cowboys, but it's where we are now. They're still above the threshold in the standings. Let's do that next on The Fan.
My view, I thought, what a wild special teams moment of block punts, kicks, kickoff returns, you know, block field goals, just a number of things, you know, going to that spot. I thought defensively the team played well on third down into that spot to go, so I was pleased to see some of that. But just, you know, not enough plays for us third downs offensively to really win it, Nikki. So unusual game for sure, but that's the division.
That's Dan Quinn. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. If you missed any part of Jay Gruden, you can grab the pod when we are done at thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio. The Monday after the Cowboys came to Landover, Maryland, and stunned the Commanders. 11-point favorites at home, two straight losses in the division, three straight losses overall for Washington, which means, Danny, right now in a 7-team NFC playoff field, the Commanders are team number 7. They would be at Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs. Hey, we just got back from there.
Oh, thank goodness.
A second trip to the link in short order. But the question we want to ask, and we'll open up the phones on this right now, at 800-636-1067. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. What's your confidence that they actually do make the playoffs after yesterday and after these three L's in a row?
My number dropped down. So if it's 1-10 coming into, you know, 2 weeks ago, it would have been what, 10
yeah,
out of 10?
Let's play this game. Before they lose to the Steelers, are 7-2. On a 1-100 scale, your confidence level is?
You know, 98. Just assuming no crazy injury or something bizarre happens.
Yeah, I'm going to say 99.
Yeah.
They lose to the Steelers, your confidence level was?
97.5.
I'm going to say 95. They lose to the Eagles. Your confidence level was?
93.
I'm going to say 80. And they lose to the Cowboys yesterday. Your confidence level is?
50.
I'm going to say, I'm debating if I want to go 55 or 60. I think I'm going to say 60%. Because the teams behind them are behind them because they're not very good. Because 12 weeks into the season, they're under 500. They are fatally flawed in some way. That's number one. And number two, they've got some tiebreaker-friendly metrics just based on the work that's already been done. Like, it's not an endorsement for me about the future. It's kind of an indictment on the other teams, an endorsement of what they've already, the hay that's already in the barn, so to speak.
For me, I'm looking at Tampa, just as an example. They've got one game where they won't be favored the rest of the way, probably at the Chargers. They've gone through their hellscape where they've had a bunch of injuries. They're not going to have Chris Godwin back, but when Mike Evans came back, they beat the brakes off the Giants yesterday, for example. They're still frisky, right? Carolina twice, a Dallas team that against everyone else is terrible, and the Saints who have pretty much all but quit. That's a team that's behind them that I think is a threat.
So that'd be four wins, which would get them 9-8, right? Which, I mean, Washington basically, I would think, is going to have nine games, but they... This is important. They lost to Tampa in week one.
That's right.
So the Bucs have the tiebreaker. My pushback on that is I think Tampa overtakes Atlanta in the South.
Entirely possible. And Atlanta matches up, of course, against Washington in a few weeks. So the idea that if Washington holds serve, they're in, right? Because they're ahead of these teams in the standings. But how confident are you in the serve holding after yesterday? I guess that's really what the question is to me. Are we just counting these games where they're going to be favored against teams that aren't particularly good? They lost that privilege to me yesterday.
Like, yes.
That's what now is, I punted that out the window. When I remember doing, called into the pregame show with, on our station.
Denton.
Weeks ago. With Denton Day. And they were asking like about the Carolina game and Linnell was nervous. And I go, no, they're playing a terrible team. What they now do is they take terrible teams and destroy them. I no longer think that. So if they played Carolina tomorrow, I'd go, I think they'll win, but it's going to be closer than everybody thinks. I've now realigned my thinking. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. Whether it's Atlanta being overtaken, there's a bunch of teams that are going to be in that 7-6, 8-5, kind of mix over the next few weeks. There's a lot of bodies to climb over. You're not catching anybody in the NFC North. That division is getting three teams. Minnesota 9-2, Green Bay's 8-3. They just keep on winning. They're all chasing Detroit, who's the best team in the NFC still. So your path is that second wild card spot, which is tougher now because there are three or four, maybe even five teams competing for it.
Yeah, I mean, well, or the third wild card spot is where they are currently.
I meant to say third. Sorry, I'm used to the old way.
Yeah, but the second would be good too because then you wouldn't have to play the best team that doesn't get a bye, like Detroit or Philly, because those are the top two teams in the conference.
Like, I want that six seed and play Seattle, please.
Yeah, if you play... If you're a six seed, you're going to play the winner of the West, which is probably going to be a 9-8 team, or the South, which is going to be Tampa, flawed, or Atlanta, terrible defense, flawed, right? I think you could win either of the... I don't know that you're going to Tampa and winning, as we saw in week one, but you have a much better chance than you did in week one. We'll see them play Atlanta. I think they could win that football game. It's going to be a pick 'em type spread. But yeah, getting to the six seed would be huge. I just think it's more likely you're the seven seed, and then you're at Detroit or you're at Philadelphia, depending on who gets the one seed. And you're cannon fodder. But I am confident they make the playoffs because of what they've already accomplished and because I don't think they'll completely collapse. Like, if they completely collapse, they lose to the Titans, and we do this again next Monday, now I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But my guess is they beat Tennessee, they get to 8-5, and then down the stretch they've got to win just two of their final four games. Even if they win one, they might get in. They win two, they definitely get in at that point with 10 wins. But you're 100% right. And I said this yesterday after the game. I was doing a little reaction with listeners. Dude, when you lose that game to Dallas, there's no such thing as a scheduled win anymore. That game, they will not be favored by 11 again this season. They will not play a team as bad as Dallas was coming in, the worst team in football, over a couple of weeks without Prescott at home. Like, the Titans game, coming off of a win over Houston, playing the way they did last week with a top 10 defense in the league, that is a more arduous task, as evidenced by the line. It's a 5-point spread than the Cowboys was supposed to have been. So the loss this weekend absolutely takes you out of any discussion where we go, oh, you're playing the Titans, so they'll win that. Then you got the Saints on the road. They'll definitely win that one. Like, that is over now. Tennessee, New Orleans, winnable, very much so. Atlanta, I would say, winnable. Dallas is a game on the road. Listen to this. They should win. Like, you don't get to play that anymore. So, yeah, if they just beat the bad teams remaining on their schedule, they have three more wins, and they get to 11 for the first time since 1991. I'm now betting against 11. I bet they lose one of those games they shouldn't, again, Tennessee, New Orleans, or Dallas, and they probably get to 10. and they lose to Philly or Atlanta or both or whatever. But I'm thinking 10-7 probably. And then you tiebreaker your way in as the final wild card team. That's my guess.
Yeah. So
and when they get there, I would have no confidence in them at that point being able to, if they were the 7th seed, beat Philly.
Go on the road and beat Philly, yeah. I mean, by losing yesterday the way that they did. So let's say they had won that game and they'd have been 8-4. Now moving up in the wild card standings, not catching Philly. I don't want to say we've taken that off the table, but the way Philly ran roughshod over the Rams last night, they kind of put their stamp on it. Yeah, it's Detroit, Philly, and then maybe everybody else. But had you been 8-4, only a half game behind Green Bay, that's Minnesota, who's got Sam Darnold turning it over a bunch now, right? They're a bit more vulnerable. Maybe you'd have been able to climb up in the standings, right? Where you're playing a road playoff game, but it's against Seattle and Atlanta or whoever wins that NFC South, as opposed to going on the road for Philly. That's off the table now, to me. And maybe that's premature, but climbing up the wild card standings, I think, is now over. With Green Bay at 8-3, Minnesota at 9-2, they're your 5 and 6 seeds, respectively. To me, this is now 7 seed or bust, and now because there are more teams involved, because you've come back down to the pack, losing a terrible game to a terrible team at home, that now makes me feel a little bit less sure.
Let's touch the people next. Do you guys still think the Commanders make the playoffs? What's your confidence? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. After yesterday's loss to one of the worst teams in football, the backup quarterback-led Dallas Cowboys, who didn't play up, Washington just played down. It wasn't like a terrible team had a game of the year. A terrible team played the way you expected them to play, and Washington out-terribled them. And so the question now is, can you trust them enough to finish this thing and get the car across the finish line as a playoff team? They are currently the last team in. They're trying to hold a couple clubs off. I think they do get in based on the work they've already done mostly. And I also think they will avoid what is the complete collapse. Like, if you look at Dan Quinn's first ever year with the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know that we've mentioned this on the show. So he started out 6-2 in Atlanta, and they finished 8-8. They had a complete, like, massive losing streak. They went into a tailspin in the second half. They hit the Kingsbury cliff, I guess we're calling it. And Dan Quinn's team finished 8-8. I don't think it's going to be that kind of like just linear, this is bad the rest of the way, where they lose to the Titans and then they come out and they lose to the Saints. That's not what I'm envisioning. I think there's a better chance they win their next two than lose them, but I'm going to pick them to split them. I think they go 10-7, they squeak in, and I just don't have the confidence that I did that they'll be the tough out and go win a playoff game for the first time since 05.
Yeah, because of where they are, to your point, the work that's already been done, they'll finish, you know, swooning down the stretch if you look at it on a binary. Will they win more games down the stretch or lose more games? I think it's the former. I think they'll end up losing more because, again, considering they started 7-2, they're not just going to finish 14-3 or whatever, you know. But having lost the way that they have, if they finish with 9 or 10 wins, that's a losing second half. But because they're already in right now and teams are chasing them, I would probably bet that they make it, but I'm not overwhelmingly confident that they just handle their business from here on out.
And that's the question. Are you guys still confident they get in? Val's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Val?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am not super confident that they get in anymore. I've been a lifelong fan, born and raised here 27 years, and anything that might go wrong very well could. With that also being said, I'm not even sure that I want them to make it in at this point. I don't want us to bottom out, obviously. But there's some obvious roster holes and some positions that could a strong draft pick in the first round could really help out, I think. And this might, I mean, we're ahead of schedule. Do we really want them to get in and lose in the first round? I mean, Taylor Heinicke could have done that for us.
I appreciate the phone call, man. My only retort to that is it's not valuable to me when Taylor Heinicke, someone that's not going to be here, or Ryan Fitzpatrick, or Carson Wentz, or some journeyman sneaks in. It is valuable to me when the kid that's going to be my quarterback goes through stuff, right? Jaden Daniels is going to be here next year, 5 years, hopefully 10 years from now, 15 years from now, and his jersey gets retired here one day. So I want him to go through some of those ups and downs. To me, the draft high thing, that's when I need a quarterback. I don't. I got one, That's my thought on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree with that. And a playoff game for a rookie quarterback is invaluable, just like it would be for Brandon Coleman and any of the other key young core members of this organization. What's interesting, and this is a topic, frankly, for several weeks down the road, this is not a young team collectively. Mm-hmm. Remember, they went out and signed a lot of veterans to one-year deals to help change the culture. So there's a lot of guys that are here this year that won't be back next year or that might go get paid. They could keep many of them around on multi-year deals, but by and large, other than a few of the acquisitions like Frankie Louvu, who might be their best player, by the way, this year, certainly their best defender. I mean, he's around. He's a core player that they paid good money to. But there were a lot of guys that were brought in just on one-year deals that they got to pay again if they're going to keep them. See a guy like a Dante Fowler or Jeremy Chinn. Let's go to Jay in D.C. What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's up, G&D? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
You too.
Hey, I talked to y'all the other day, man, and I told y'all about Sir Isaac Newton, man. And I said that an object in motion wants to stay in motion, and an object at rest, that's just Cliff Kingsbury's offense, you know, and it was going to be hard for us to just get out of the mud and, you know what I'm saying, then all of a sudden get it right. But with all that being said, man, I got confidence. Like you said, I think they stored up enough timber early on in the season when they were winning those games to have a lull like this. Coming down the stretch, you know we're going to get a full bye week. The schedule is a little bit weaker. I think we'll get some guys back healthy. I think they'll right the ship, and it's good that we're going through these things now and having these, you know, mishaps now. Mm-hmm. Going into the playoffs, I think we'll be fine, man. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you, buddy. I love going through – again, for my core young guys, your point about this being an older roster is 100% right, trying to change some culture. I love the idea of my young guys going through some stuff. Like that to me is what this is all about. That's what you're doing. It's what the Nationals just finished doing, right? With this year, that's what the Caps kind of were trying to do on the fly is, well, as you fold in some of these kids to the veterans, go through that playoff race, go through that, be cannon fodder in the first round, see what it takes. I'm all in favor of that this year.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. The question right now at 800-636-1067 is, what is your level of confidence that the Commanders make the playoffs after what was a tough loss to the Dallas Cowboys? Let's go to Andrew in D.C. What's up, Drew?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey,
I have a pretty high confidence level. I mean, first of all, I'm sort of optimistic we get Marshawn Lattimore back next week or for the Titans, partly because the game is just all that much more important. And with him in there, that's going to change the dynamic of actually our pass rush. I think we get the Titans, who have kind of a, you know, unfortunate offense most of the time, and they'll get off the field more. We'll have more ball control on the, you know, we'll have more time on offense. I'm a little worried about the running back situation, but I'm going to guess, and I don't know, maybe they pull Wiley up, who seemed to do pretty well in the preseason.
Look good in the preseason,
yeah. Yeah, he was great in the preseason. I liked him.
Yeah, and so then we're at 8-5, and then, you know, I just think they get 2 weeks off. They get kind of get their act back together, and they're going to take two games. I mean, they're just going to do it. You know, it might be the Saints, Falcons, or Cowboys are not going to beat them twice. They're that bad. So I think it's pretty bullish.
I mean, think about it. Dallas played a terrible game. It's a great phone call. Thank you, Andrew. And Washington just about beat them yesterday. You can't play a lot worse than they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to lose to that team twice. And by the next time you play them in the final week of the season, they're going to be like 6 weeks into not caring at all about their season. So, yeah, that should be a win. But, again, you lost the privilege of that.
Yep.
We could say it all we want to. It just doesn't matter anymore. There are no such things as a scheduled win. He hit on two things we've got to cover next. Marshawn Lattimore and whether he makes his debut against the Titans. How badly do they need him? And then the running back situation being in peril at this point. They have played without B-Rob. They have played without Eckler this year. They have never played without both at the same time. And there's a real chance, I think, that happens before the bye on Sunday against the Titans. So we should get into that as well. Plus, we want to hear from you guys. You're still confident and sure they're going to make the playoffs. 800-636-1067 on G&D.